Morning. Today's daf in Chulin Samach Aleph. We are on the bottom, towards the bottom of Samach Amud Beis, finishing up a little bit of yesterday's Agadata. Yesterday's daf, despite being the fact that we're in the third parak of Chulin Avela Treifus, and it has been predominantly halacha, as we go through all the various simanim of an animal that rendered a treifa. Nevertheless, the Gemara took a day off yesterday from the halacha to speak out some Divrei Agadata. It really comes off the heels of a Mishnah that we started back on Nun Tes, that's now 2 days ago, where the Mishnah there changed, not topics, but changed a little bit gears within this third parak of the Masechta. The Mishnah back on Nun Tes now gave a description of Simane Behema Tahora versus Simane Behema Tameya. Those signs that render an animal kosher versus those signs that would render an animal not kosher. The Torah there gives clarity on what exactly are the simanim when it comes to a behema. When it comes to an oaf, the Torah does not give us any kind of clarity. The Torah just simply identifies 24 birds that are not kosher. That's going to be the predominant discussion of today's daf. And then, the Mishnah moved on to dagim v'chagavim, fish and grasshoppers. The Gemara took a little bit of a detour yesterday. In discussing this, the Gemara talked about various fantastic animals that existed Bizman HaGemara. The Gemara then went into a dialogue between Rav Yeshua ben Chananya and the Caesar, and that took up a lot of yesterday's Gemara. Gemara then went in terms of Agarata, went into the topic of the Shtei HaMa'oros, the two luminaries in the sky, the sun and the moon, some Gemaras that we were familiar with. The Gemara then also went on to discuss various other midrashim. One of the midrashim the Gemara quoted yesterday was regarding Moshe Rabbeinu neither being an archer nor being a hunter, or to do it in the correct order of the Gemara, neither being a hunter nor being an archer, and yet Moshe Rabbeinu is able to identify that these are the only exceptional animals in the entire animal kingdom that either have split hooves and don't chew its cud, or chew its cud and don't have split hooves. And the Gemara says, and you know that Moshe Rabbeinu was neither a hunter nor an archer. The Gemara's terminology for these words are kenigi and blistery. These are very strange words, unusual words. And so the Amoraim pointed to one another and said, you know what? Such a strange word. Write it down. Write it down in your notebook. Write down the definition of these words. And that's pretty much where we ended with yesterday. With all that stated, we are now in the Gemara towards the bottom of Samach Amud Beis. It's a little bit after the two dots. And the Gemara now is going to go over other examples of agadatas that have strange words in them, words that we don't normally hear throughout Shas. And so there's permission then to write it down. By the way, one of the general backdrops to these Gemaras of write it down in your notebook is because there was obviously a good part of Jewish history where Torah Shebaal Peh was Baal Peh. It was an oral tradition. And so therefore they did not afford themselves a luxury of writing it down. In fact, the Gemara in Gittin says that Torah Shebaal Peh was not meant to be written down. It was supposed to remain oral. And then obviously with Rabbi Yehuda Anasi and the Amoraim, so then they started writing it down. But the idea over here, if you have permission now to write this word down and to translate in your notebook, so okay, so in other words, they kept notes for themselves, but they didn't predominantly write down the Torah Shebaal Peh. With all that stated, we're picking it up. We are in the Gemara now, right where it quotes the pasuk in Yoshua, Perek Yud Gimel. It's a little more than halfway down in the Amud. First word on the line is Zilk Siv Kenini Ublistri Ba'agadatecha Uparsha. Right, write down those words in your Divrei Agadata and give a definition for it. And now the Gemara is going to move topics in Agadata, but as Rashi points out right over here, it's going to stay on point with the idea that we're going to hear unusual words. Chameshet Sarni Plishtim. So we are looking now at a pasuk in Yoshua. We're in the 13th parak of Yoshua. And the pasuk in Yoshua now is identifying the five territories of the Plishtim. At least that's how the pasuk opens up. Chameshet Sarni Plishtim. And now the list of the five. And feel free to keep count as we go through the five. Hazasi, Vashdudi, Hashkaloni, Hagiti, Hakruni, Va'ivim. Now, a successful count over here would be six. So the pasuk in Yeshua obviously is very difficult. It says here five territories, and then it counts six, and that doesn't compute. So Amar Chamisha v'Chashiv Shisa, so the Gemara asks exactly that question. So Amar of Yonasan, Arnuki Shalahem Chamisha. So the Gemara is going to give a couple of suggestions. So the in terms of the ones that are Arunaki. Now, Arunaki, you've heard that word before? Chances are probably no. You've not heard that word before. It's a strange word. It's an unusual word. In the context of our Gemara over here, in the answer to the question of how is the pasuk opening up with five and then listing six, so the first answer of the Gemara is the important ones. The important ones are going to be five, and then there's one that is not that important. Okay, that's one way to say it. But Amalei Rav Chisel Rav Tachlif Bar Avina Kasev Arunaki Bagatechu Parsha. Wow, that's a good word. So you know what, Arunaki, you haven't heard that word before, so do me a favor. Sit down, write it down, put it down in your little notebook, and also give a definition of it. Okay, as long as we're here and we ask the question in the Pasuk in Yoshua, in terms of opening up with five and then listing six, so the Gemara is going to give other answers to this very question. Upligi de Rav Dama Rav Ivim Miteman Ba'u. So an additional answer is that the nation of Ivim, the territory of Ivim, they're not really Plishtim. The truth of the matter is that they come from Teman. Teman, if it has any kind of familiarity to you, so Teman is an offshoot of Eliphaz. Right? Take a look at Rashi. Miteman, Ben Eliphaz, Ben Esav. Ba'u, v'ivu lelo plishtim, v'yatsumi kamamu v'al lagur b'neim v'lachilo chashishisha, sarnei plishtim. So Rashi over here explains that really the truth of the matter is that Ivim, so they are our cousins. They're not plishtim. They're really Edomites from the family of Esav. And what are they doing there hanging out with the plishtim? They love the plishtim gods, explains Rashi. And so therefore they migrated over to the plishtim in order to become Plishtim worshippers, or Plishtim God worshippers. Now, Tanya Namihach, the Gemara, we're back in the Gemara. The Gemara now is going to quote a Braisa, supporting the very same idea. Even Mitaman Ba'u, that really, Ivim are really from Teman. So we're going to give a couple of explanations of why the name of this particular group are called Ivim. One possibility, says the Gemara, Shi'ivusos Makamam, they destroyed their own location, their hometown. How did they destroy their hometown? Very simple. They left it. So by leaving their hometown and leaving it desolate, so therefore they destroy their hometown. Another explanation of Ivim, take the ayin and change it into an aleph. That doesn't literally mean convert into an aleph, but in other words, the aleph and the ayin are interchangeable. I know there really is different ways of pronouncing it, but for us Ashkenazim, there really isn't. But anyway, the Gemara over here says it could be Iva means to desire, to want. And we already saw this in Rashi. They wanted to worship the gods of the Plishtim. Davar Acher, Ivim Shekolaro Osam, Ochzaso Ivis. Anyone who sees them is going to be shaking and quivering. They are an extraordinarily terrifying group of people. The Gemara gives one example in terms of what makes them so terrifying. Amar Rav Yosef, V'islu Shitzari Darishine, Cholcha V'chad. Every one of them has 16 rows of teeth. Don't ask me. I can't help you in terms of the anatomy over here, the physiology. The Gemara could be speaking over here in hyperbole. Just the idea that they're extraordinarily frightening group of people. So here we are now in the Gemara, finishing up yesterday's Agadata, and a discussion in the Gemara regarding psukim in the Torah that seem to be extraneous, seem to be superfluous. Reish Lakish says it much stronger than the way I just said it. He said, "Harbe mikrosher ruin lisrof." Right? They should be burnt. What it means is that they look like they should be burnt. Meaning, what are they doing in the Torah Kedosha? Torah Kedosha is there to give us mitzvos. Torah Kedosha is there to give us stories about the avos and the imos in order to model how we should live. And then there seems to be these ancillary psukim in the Torah, which really seem to have no bearing whatsoever, neither on Torah and mitzvos, neither on Midos, and what are they doing there? And so, rightly sorry, if it seems like we should burn them, and meanwhile, Heinein Gufi Torah. But Reish Lakish says, you're missing everything. They are really the essence of the Torah, a lot of these psukim, and so we're going to give but just examples and illustrations of exactly this point. Number one, we turn to the beginning of Sefer Devarim. Ha'ivim ha'yoshim mechatzirim ad azam. You know, the Ivim were living in Chatzirim up until the point of Aza, right to Gaza. So, my nafkalan mina. Now, the Gemara asked a question that we're all asking as we're reading the Torah. That's very nice. And we're learning a little geopolitical history right now. Like, what is the Torah doing, giving us this information? So, mida ashbe avimelech l'Avraham. So, the Gemara says like this. we know that we go back generations, and we go back to Avram and Avimelech, and they made a peace treaty. Im tishkor li lenini ulenechti. Now, the truth of the matter is that as we just read the pasuk at the end of Parshas Vayera, not the tail end. The tail end of Parshas Vayera, of course, is the Akedah, but right before the Akedah. So you have now this peace treaty between Avraham and Avimelech, the head of the Plishtim. So it's only for three generations. You can imagine that by the time we're at Yehoshua, so we're well past three generations. But presumably the understanding over here is that it can go even beyond three generations. So Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Leisu Kaftarim Lifku Me'ivim, Dehainu Plishtim, V'Leisu Yisrael Lifku Me'kaftarim. So the Gemara says, and now it's not geopolitics. What it really is the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu constructed the scenario in which we can now take the land. Because you see, if the land would have remained with the Plishtim, so we could not have taken that land. Why? Peace treaty. Because Avraham made a generational pact together with the Plishtim that they were not going to encroach upon one another. Once the Kafsarim take that land from the Evim, i.e. Plishtim, so now, it's open season. So now the land no longer belongs to the Plishtim, and now belongs to the Kaftarim, and that allows us to take it. Kayota B'davar, the Gemara says, I'll give you another example of this very same idea. Atar Maki Cheshmon Yer Sichon Melech Amari, he. V'hu Necham B'melech Moav. So we have this Cheshbon, which is the city of Sichon, who's the king of the Amorim, who took it away from Moav. Again, geopolitics, like, what do we care? And again, the Gemara's answer is the same answer. So the answer is very simple. Because we know that if the land would have been held by Moab, we know that we're not allowed to start up with Moab. We have to be kind to Moab. We have to be good to Moab. Right? To limited degrees, by the way. In other words, also the Pesukim and Parshas Kisei says that when they convert and they join the Jewish people, we're not allowed to marry them. Okay, but aside, leave that point aside. But however, we do have to have a certain amount of distance from the Moabites. So Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Leisu Sichon Lefek Mimoav, V'Leisu Yisrael V'Lefek Misichon. And again, same idea. The idea is that along comes Sichon, takes the land away from Moab, and now that allows us to conquer the land. Because we don't have any kind of ties or treaties together with Sichon. And so once they take the land away from Moab, so now that leaves the land available for us. And we are good to go. And Rapapa makes a statement. We saw it already a number of times in Shas. We're seeing it again in today's daf as well. Excuse me. That Amon and Moav are Tiaro B'Sichon. They were purified with Sichon. Meaning, same idea. If the land would have remained by Amon and Moav, we wouldn't have been able to conquer it. Once Sichon conquers it, allows us to conquer it as well. Tzidonim yikru lechamon Siryon. More examples of psukim that seem to have no point and no objective. And meanwhile, hein gufei Torah. It's the essence of the Torah. So the Gemara again turns its attention to the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, and the Gemara tells us about the Tzidonim who yikru lechermon Siryon. So when they got to the Hermon mountain, so they refer to it as Siryon. Tana. Snir v'siryon mehar Eretz Yisrael, that Sinir or Shinir, if I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, I apologize. But and Siryon are from Har Eretz Yisrael. They're from the mountains of Eretz Yisrael. Malam shekol echav echad meumas haolam halachu banu lo krak gadol la'atzmo. It means to say it's as follows: the non-Jewish population took a look at us, took a look at our country, and loved it and desired it so much so. So that when they went back, so they named their mountain region after our mountain region. And as Rashi points out over here, the mountain region even is, and generally is not even the most exciting. Meaning, the mountains are nice to look at, but in terms of where you want to live, in terms of agriculture, so mountains are, they're not the best. But meanwhile, Har Eretz Yisrael are beloved. Everyone modeled their country after them. Right, they call. Let me just reread. She call echav echad muumas olam halachu banol krak adol. They all built themselves cities. Laatzmo vehalalo alshem hari eretz yisrael. Shlam decha she afilu hari eretz yisrael chavivin aluumas olam. Even the mountains of eretz yisrael are beloved by the entire world. And so, again, the point over here is not just simply a little bit of geography and understanding what they named it after, but the point of the pasuk is how beloved Eretz Yisrael is. Not only do we Jews appreciate Eretz Yisrael, even the non-Jews of the world appreciate the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. Kayotze Ba, I'll give you another example, says the Gemara. Vesame Avir Sola Arim. Another example of psukim that seem to be just superfluous. Like, what's the point? So I'll give you another example. The end of Sefer Bereishis. The end of Sefer Bereishis. So what did Yosef do? So he collected all the grain. And when the Egyptians lost the grain through the years of famine, so they went to Yosef. And Yosef purchased sold grain, made a fortune for the king, Paro. And eventually, as the Egyptians lost their money, so then they enslaved themselves to Yosef. And in addition to that, Vesa'am hevir sola arim. And he moved around all the nations from one region to another region within Egypt. All very nice, all very interesting. What's the point? Why is it making it into the Torah? My nafkimina de la likra le'echav gavasa. So the Gemara says because what Yosef was doing was he was trying to prepare Mitzrayim for the settlement of his brothers. If the brothers were just to simply come into the Mitzrayim and there was no background and nobody moved from their place, so then who would have been the exiles? The only people that would have been the exiles were the Yud Bei Shatim. Would have just simply been the Yaakov's family. They would have been the exiles and everybody else would have been secured and at home. And I've lived here, my parents lived here, my grandparents lived here. And so it would have made B'nai Yisrael seem very uncomfortable. So by Yosef taking all the families and spreading them out throughout all of Mitzrayim, so basically now he created a situation where everybody was slightly more comfortable. Or specifically, his brothers would be slightly more comfortable. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of yesterday's daf. We are on the very bottom of Samach Amud Beis, and we are now beginning today's daf. It's a short daf. But it is going to be, and it's really singularly focused, singularly minded on one point. And so just as a brief introduction to today's daf. I said some of this on Friday, but it's okay. It's all good information. It's all worth repeating. When it comes to birds of the Torah, so the Torah tells us that there are birds that we can eat and birds that we cannot eat. The Torah does not give us simanim. The Torah does not give us characteristics of which birds we can and we cannot eat, unlike animals where the Torah does. But rather what the Torah does is it just simply identifies, here's a list of birds that you're not allowed to eat. You look in two places in the Torah where you're going to find this information. You're going to go to the 11th parak of Sefer Vayikra. You're also going to go to the 14th parak of Sefer Devarim. In both of those places, the Torah goes and lists a listing of birds that we're not allowed to eat. There are 24 in both. A couple days from now, the Gemara is going to ask the question, because if you do the comparison between the 24 that are listed in Parsha Shmini, and 24 that list in Parsha Srei, so you'll notice that there are going to be subtle differences that exist between the lists. Some of the birds' names change just a little bit. That question is going to be coming up, but not in today's daf, that comes up a little bit later. In the meantime, however, there's no characteristics. And so, if all I had was just simply the Torah Kedosha, so then what we would have said is that these 24 birds were not allowed to eat. Any other bird of the world that's not any one of these 24 were allowed to eat. And sure, and that would have been the end of it, and that would have been just fine. However, we learned in the Mishnah back in Nuntes, and we're going to be learning again right now, and that is that the Chachamim came along and gave characteristics. Meaning they looked at these 24 birds and they said, what do these 24 birds share in terms of characteristics? And what they're going to do for us now is give us a characteristic in which we're not allowed to eat the birds if they exhibit these characteristics. Now, there are going to be four, but the truth of the matter is that you could really view it as one and three. But I'll keep it simple. There are four characteristics. Why break it down to one and three? Because one is more behavioral in nature, and three are physiological. The one that's behavioral in nature is it has to be an enodores. Cannot be a predatory animal. Can't be a predatory bird. Now, what exactly that means, the Gemara never says it with clarity, and the Rishonim debate exactly what that means, that it has to be a non-predatory bird. For purposes of simplicity today, I'll just continue to say non-predatory or predatory. Rashi gives a pshat, Tosfos gives a pshat. You could see Tosfos on today's daf, actually. The third Tosfos on today's daf, who discusses exactly what it means to be a Doris and an Eino Doris. But again, I'll leave that right now out of today's discussion. It's an important part of today's daf, but I'll leave that out for now. So one is that's the behavioral, and then the other three are physiological. The other three are, it has to have a zefik, it has to have a crop. If it does not have a crop, it's not kosher. It has to have a karkavan niklaf. Its gizzard has to be peeled. If you open up the stomach, the gizzard of the animal, so what you have in a kosher animal is that the membrane just easily peels, it glides right off. So that's karkavan niklaf. And then, number four, etzba yaseira. It has to have an additional finger, an extra digit. Now, what exactly that means? Again, the Rishonim debate exactly what that means. Rashi gives the description of the finger coming out of the back of its leg, as opposed to all of them pointing forward. The Rambam writes that it has to have one of its fingers being slightly longer and elongated. Okay, so the truth of the matter is that even though we know exactly what the four simanim are, but admittedly, we're not 100% sure how to actually define every one of these four simanim. Zefek and Korkovan Niklaf, quite frankly, that's easy. They're very straightforward. It's the Etzba Yisera and the Eino Dares. They're a little bit trickier. Okay. Now, with that stated now, so the Chachamim come along and gave us Simanim. Question, which is going to be addressed in today's daf. Where did the Chachamim get the Simanim from? How did they arrive at that conclusion? Meaning the Torah gives a list of 24 birds, and now we have Simanim, and where does that come from? And do all 24 birds exhibit these Simanim or don't exhibit these Simanim? So a lot of good questions, and that's what we're going to be discussing in the course of today's daf. One other word of introduction. There are 24 birds listed in the Torah. What are the definitions of those 24 birds? So good luck. So good luck to all of us to try to give a definition to what these 24 birds are. One of the things that are going to make this Gemara slightly more abstract, meaning it should be a very straightforward and concrete Gemara, but it's not. It's not going to be so concrete. It'll be slightly abstract. We don't know the definitions of a lot of what these birds are. I'll give you an example, the best example of all of these. The first bird, which is going to really be the prototype bird that we're going to be discussing in the course of today's daf in great detail, is the Nesher. What is the Nesher? All right, and with pun intended, pray tell. Like, what is the Nesher? Which bird is the Nesher? If I asked you for a definition. So I would have said eagle. Most people would say eagle. Probably not correct. Right? The eagle being the definition of the Nesher is probably not a good translation. In fact, this is a debate, this is not a recent debate or a current debate. This debate goes all the way back to the Rishonim. The Rishonim already are debating exactly what the definition of the Nesher is. So some say an eagle, and some say, no, it's not an eagle. We're going to see, not today's daf, we're going to see a little bit later ahead of us, the Gemara is going to give us characteristics of what the Nesher actually looks like. It doesn't sound like an eagle. Right, sounds a little bit more like a vulture. And that also may not be correct. In other words, to put it simply, we're not sure what any of the birds are that I mentioned in the Torah. And what does that do for us? It creates a bit of a problem. And again, this is not a current problem. This problem already was articulated very clearly all the way back in the time of the Rishonim. The Rambam writes about this, that we don't know what these birds are in the Torah. If we knew with clarity exactly what these 24 birds were in the Torah, so then we would be able to eat any other bird as long as we know it's not one of the 24. Problem, of course, is that we don't know. We're not sure. So what do? So we base ourselves on a Masorah. We work with tradition, meaning did my parents eat this bird? Did my grandparents eat this bird? So if that's so then go ahead, gesundheit, enjoy, eat this bird. But if I don't have a Masorah of this particular bird, so then we're not going to eat it. That's generally speaking how the Rishonim explain which birds we end up eating, we don't, and it's a function of the fact that we don't really have working definitions of what these 24 birds are. It leads to wonderful controversies, which I'm not going to explore right now, but like, let's say, for example, the turkey, right? You know when we discovered the turkey? It's when Columbus discovered America. I've said this too many times. Columbus didn't discover America. It was discovered well before him. But it's okay. Somehow he had a great marketing agent. So he got credit. Yeah. But in other words, when they came to America, only then and only then did they uncover the turkey. So
some people say he was Jewish.
Okay. Yeah, we're correct. Very good. Very good. So they only discovered the turkey then. So before the 15th century, 16th century. So whose parents ate turkey? Whose grandparents ate turkey? Okay, and meanwhile, I could tell you, my parents ate turkey, my grandparents ate turkey. In other words, okay, most of our families, you know, you can give me such a masara. They had turkeys in Iran? No, of course not. So, in Europe also, right? No, it's an American bird. Okay, so at least a wonderful controversy is like that. Like, we don't have a masara when it comes to turkey. I mean, I do, but where did that masara start from? Okay, so anyway, so good. So you understand some of these basic problems. Okay, I know that was a lengthy introduction to today's daf. It was worthwhile, a lot of good information. The Gemara now is going to be bothered by the following question. We are on the very bottom of Samach Amud Beis. Simani ha'of lo nemru. It does not say any simanim by a bird. Below, the Gemara's question is very simple. It's a one-word question. Really? The Torah does not give us simanim? The Torah does give us simanim, not explicitly, but still. We read the Torah carefully enough, and we know how to darshan the Torah, which we do know how to darshan the Torah. So we're going to find that these simanim are not just simply conjured up by the chachamim. We, at least right now, what the Gemara is going to argue is that it's part and parcel of gufei haTorah. It's in the Torah. The Hatayim, the Gemara quotes the following brisa. Nesher. We turn over here to the bird of discussion, the Nesher. And again, as I just said in my introduction, we're not really sure what it is. Could be an eagle, could be a vulture. I'll stay safe. I'm going to call it Nesher for the rest of today's daf. So, man Nesher miyuchad. Now, what is an interesting characteristic when it comes to the Nesher? The Gemara says four things. Number one, Ein lo etzbi yisera, does not have the etzbi yisera, vizefik, does not have a crop, vein kukav aniklof, its gizzard does not peel, the inner lining of the gizzard does not peel, vidores, and it's a predator. So as far as the Nesher is concerned, it is the most unkosher bird, given that there are four characteristics, and given that it goes 4 for 4 in terms of doesn't have that, or that, so it doesn't have all four, the Nesher now becomes our prototype. And now, what do we have? We have in Halacha something referred to as a Binyan Av. So now we have the prototype non-kosher bird of the Nesher. And so therefore, what are we going to do with it? So, af kol kayotze bo tame. Any other bird that shares these characteristics of the Nesher also is not going to be kosher. And so what we have over here is, unlike the way the Mishnah presented it, where it's a characteristic that was conjured up by the Chachamim, what we have over here in the Braisa is that no, we're actually using our classic methods of Drasha called Binyanav. So that is something more sourced in the Torah than just simply something which is Manu Chachamim. And while we're on the topic, continuing in the Braisa, Tarin Sheishlam Metzbi Yisera Vizefek Vakurvka Vaniklav Vein Dorsim Vauchlin Tarin Av Kol Chayotze Bam Tarin. And when it comes to the Torah, the prototype kosher bird, so what does it have? All four Simani Kashos. It goes 4 for 4 in terms of being a kosher bird. And as a result of that, anything that shares those characteristics are in fact going to be kosher. Now, as you can probably already guess, in the Braisa, you don't have to guess, we see in the Braisa, there's a lot of middle ground. Meaning that there are going to be birds that have maybe one or two or three of the Simani Kashos, and where do they stand? Because right now in the Braisa, all we learned are the extremities. We learned the Nesher, 0 for 4. We learned the Tor, 4 for 4. The Nesher is not kosher, the Tor is kosher. And what about all that exists in between? Stay tuned, we're going to be discussing that in just a moment. Excuse me. Let's take a look at the top Rashi on Samach Aleph Amud Aleph for an interesting discussion. What did we just learn now in this Braisa? Anything that exhibits the four non-kosher signs is going to be not kosher. And what does that mean? I'm going to give you two possibilities. Does that mean that either one, if I have any other bird I find in the world with four non-kosher signs, we have just discovered now another non-kosher bird. Meaning even though the Torah lists 24, could be that there's more than 24. There's really whatever the number is. In other words, because we just learned together that we have just established that the Nesher, being the prototype non-kosher bird, So any other bird that models after the prototype is also going to be not kosher. So that's one possibility that there's more. So one possibility is that there's more than 24. I'll give you another possibility, and that is that no, there's not more than 24. What happens when you discover a bird with the four non-kosher traits? So what could we say about that bird? We could say that that's a nesher. Rashi chooses the latter approach that I just gave. Take a look at the top Rashi in the Amud. Nesher, huska b'tamein v'danim b'nyanav. Hey, menu. Dema neshem yichad ein lo echad mikol simanim halalu v'tamei. Af kol she'ein lo echad mikol simanim halalu. Min nesher hu. Any bird that exhibits these lack of four kosher signs is in fact going to be a nesher. So really interesting where Rashi over here writes, but with clarity, that we're not adding to the list of birds. We're just simply saying, how to identify the nesher? Right. That's Rashi. What about the other approach, that there may be more than 24 non-kosher birds? That's Tosos, right on the summit. First Tosos on the summit. So Tosos writes that there actually are more than 24 non-kosher birds. So why does the Torah then just give a listing of 24 birds? Because as we're going to see in the course of today's daf, the other 23 are chidushim, for reasons which we're going to explain in just a moment. Why doesn't the Torah, if there are more than 24 non-kosher birds, so why don't we go in the other direction? Why doesn't the Torah list the birds that are kosher? So Tosos writes, I'm taking out a line of the Tosos over here. Tosos writes in the first Tosos, it's halfway down the Tosos. Aval im haya bo limnos b'taharim hayat sarich limnos yoser. Because if the Torah were to have to write the kosher birds, it'd be a much longer and exhaustive list. So easier for the Torah to consolidate and to concisely write the 24 that are not kosher, even though there's, according to Tosos, more than 24, but even with the more than 24, there still are considerably more kosher than non-kosher birds. Okay. Just an interesting abstract machlokas between Rashi and Tosos in terms of when I do find another bird, is that another type or is it just another nesher? Okay, but anyway, we're back in the Gemara and a lot of ironing out to do. Amar Rabbi Lo Nemar Perusha Medivrei Torah Ela Medivrei Sofrim. So the Gemara says, okay, this braisa does not contradict what we learned back in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we said it's not written in the Torah, but it's generated by the Chachamim. In the braisa, it's learned out through Drasha. So Abai's answer is very simple. Elu ve'elu. The Mishnah's right. The braisa's right. Meaning, well, the Mishnah's simple point is that these characteristics are not beferish b'Torah. They're not explicitly in the Torah. Fine. But now with the Chachamim, given the tools that they have, otherwise known as Binyanav, so they're able to extract it based on the method of Binyanav. Okay, good. Tini Rabbi Chiya, Ofa ba b'simen echad tahor, lefi she'in doma l'nesher. Okay, now, what do we know regarding the Nesher? So it went 0 for 4. It has none of the kosher characteristics. So starts the Gemara now with the following discussion. It's a Braisa Rabbi Chiya. What if I have a bird that exhibits one of the simanei kashrus? Just went 1 for 4. Okay. So kosher or not kosher? Well, let's kosher. Meaning, let's start with the fact that the Torah gives us the nesher. The nesher went 0 for 4, which means then that's the cutoff of when it's not kosher. Anything short of that, it's going to be kosher, right? So the witch of the Gemara says, Nesher de Leislei, Klal Hu, Telo Techo. Ha'ika de Islei Chad Techo. So good. So the Gemara says, so that would be now our cutoff point. Our cutoff point is where you have none of the Simani Kashrus, like the Nesher, so that bird is not kosher. Anything short of that, it's going to be kosher. So right now we're holding by one of the Simani Kashrus would render the bird a kosher bird. The Gemara says, huh? Well, hold on. There's still more information that we need before we arrive at that conclusion. You'll see what I mean. But Leilav Tahorim, so the Gemara is, I'm sorry, Leilav Mitahorim. Gemara says, wait 1 second. We also said in that very braisa that we opened up with which we opened up with on the top of the Amud, we also said that what is a prototype kosher bird? The Tor. The Tor is a prototype kosher bird. It went 4 for 4. So now, here's what I would say. If the prototype kosher bird is 4 for 4, So anything short of that would be not kosher. 3 for 4, and certainly 2 for 4 or 1 for 4, would be not kosher. So why are we working from the nesher and working in that direction? Let's work from the tor, and let's go from that direction, and then obviously the conclusion would be drastically different. Matarim de'ika kulu arba, afachanami hadika kulu arba. So the Gemara now articulates that question. Im kain, the Gemara says no. Because shar of is tamein dekasa v'chmana lamali. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you why you're not right. If we would have started with the Torah as being our prototype, where you have to go 4 for 4 to be kosher, and if you're 3 for 4, 2 for 4, 1 for 4, and certainly 0 for 4, so you're not going to be kosher. If that's true, so then there'd be no point in the Torah to go and describe the other 23 non-kosher birds. Because as we're going to learn in just a moment in today's daf, you see, when it comes to the other 23 kosher birds, they're not like the nesher. In that, the nesher is 0 for 4. What about the other 23 of the birds that are listed in the Torah? Some of them have one kosher sign. Some of them have two kosher signs. And some of them have 3 kosher signs. So what the Gemara now is arguing is that if you, in order to be kosher, you had to have gone 4 for 4 on the kosher simanim, so then just write the Torah and be done with it. Because anything short of that would have been not kosher. By virtue of the fact, I know the argument's a little tricky, but by virtue of the fact that the Torah now listed the other 23 birds, and we know that these other 23 birds all are not 0 for 4, some being 1, some being 2, some being 3 for 4, in terms of kosher simanim. So therefore, it shows us that in general, having 1, 2, and certainly 3 of the kosher signs would in fact make it a kosher bird. And what the Torah is in fact listing are the exceptions. The Gemara wonders, why aren't they serving as a binyanav? In other words, 3 kosher signs and I can't eat it. So then why don't we set that as a binyanav? And certainly if it just has 2 kosher signs, and certainly if it has 1, im kain, oriv dekasar rachmana lamali. So the Gemara says, okay, but we're going to just simply work our way down. We'll start now with the Orev. Now, the Orev has 2 kosher signs. Now, at one point in time during the daf today, you're probably going to wonder, what are the 2 kosher signs of the Orev? So here's where I'm hamstrung. 1, I don't know what the Orev is. I'll say it's a raven, but again, we're not sure. And 2, I don't know which of the 2 kosher signs it in fact has, even if I knew which bird it is. So this is where the Gemara gets a little bit abstract, because I don't know what the Orev is. I don't know what the 2 kosher signs are. But here's what I do know. We'll keep the Gemara abstract, that there is such a non-kosher bird known as the Orev. It only has 2. It exhibits 2 of the kosher signs, and the Torah says don't eat it. So, im kein Orev dekasar rachmana lamali. Hashta disle talasa lochlin and disle trei mibaye. So here's the argument of the Gemara. If 3 kosher signs already disqualifies you because it doesn't have 4, so then why would the Torah even need to write Orev? So, okay, good. So you see then that 3 is not the threshold. So the Gemara says, "Veleilev me arev." So the Gemara says, "Okay, so why don't we learn it out from arev?" As we turn to the top of Samach Alfam and Beis, Mahasam Trei Lo Af Kol Trei Lo Imkain Peres VeAznia Dikas of Rachmana Lamali. What about the Peres and the Aznia? Peres and Aznia are 2 of the 24 birds. Each one of them exhibit only 1 of the kosher simanim. So why would the Torah then have to write that? Meaning, if you have 2, you're no good. So certainly, if you only have 1, you're not going to be good. So mahasam trei lo, af kol trei lo. Peres v'aznia dechaz v'chlan lamali. Hasha, the Gemara is not going to just make that point. Hasha di islei trei lo achlinan. If it has 2 of the kosher signs and we don't eat it, di islei chad mi baye. So if it only has 1, we're certainly not going to eat it. V'nigmar mi peres v'aznia. So the Gemara says, okay, so why don't we learn now from peres v'aznia? Meaning, okay, good. So they have only but 1 of the kosher signs there, and the Torah says not to eat it. Im kein nesher dekasar rachmana lamali. So then good. So then why bother with the nesher, which is 0 for 4. It's 0 for 4. So hasha di islei chad lo achlin and delei islei klal mi baye. If it has 1 of the kosher simanim, like the peres and the aznia, and the Torah says we can't eat it, so then the nesher, we certainly are not allowed to eat. Ela nesher delei islei klal hu, delo techal, ha di islei chad echol. So the Gemara says, so really it must be, and I know we're coming around full circle on the argument. Just give me 1 second. We're coming around full circle on the argument. And so therefore, it really starts with a nesher. The nesher has zero of the kosher simanim. And so that means to say that that sets the benchmark, that sets the bar. Anything less than that, or I should say better, anything more than that, meaning all you need is one kosher siman, and now that establishes that bird is going to in fact be a kosher bird. And so now, why does the Torah then go through the listing of these 23? Because they're all exceptions to the rule. The rule is one of the kosher simanim allows us to eat it, makes it kosher, except for these 23. These 23 do exhibit kosher simanim, but yet the Torah says these are exceptional birds that we can't eat. Ve'ala time, I'm just reading all this inside the Gemara. Ve'ala time the kasuv rechman and esher. Halav hachi avamina leilav miperes va'aznia. So the Gemara says, now, a little bit of theoretical halacha, if you will. If the Torah would not have been written, or not have written nesher, so then where would we have set the bar? We would have set it at one. Because we will learn it from Peres and Aznia. Now, you know how Binyanav works. Binyanav works when you have one example, and that now is going to set the precedent. What happens when you have two? So now two is not the precedent. Two are the exception. Why would the Torah give us two birds where each one of them is exhibiting one siman? Give me just but one bird. Now remember, all this now becomes theoretical because we do have the nesher. But if we didn't have the nesher, why is the Torah giving us two examples of one siman birds? So the Gemara says, Gemiri de'ika b'hai, leka b'hai, v'dika b'hai, leka b'hai. The Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because we have a tradition. Even though the Peres and the Aznia only have one siman kashrus each, it's not the same. It's different simani kashrus, one for the Peres and one for the Aznia. Okay, now the Gemara is going to take one step backwards and take a look now at our entire picture. Okay, so we have constructed the following halachic picture. Nesher is a prototype. It's 0 for 4. It doesn't exhibit any of the kosher, of the four kosher simanim as we have regarding a bird. And now that's going to set the benchmark for what is and what is not a kosher bird. If it is 0 for 4, so then it's going to be not kosher just like the nesher. And again, Rashi and Tosfos, like we learned earlier this morning. According to Rashi, that means if it's 0 for 4, it too is a nesher. According to Tosfos, if it's 0 for 4, it's not a nesher, but of course it's not kosher. In other words, the Torah, there are other birds in the Torah, there are other birds in the world that are going to be not kosher. You just simply have to go 0 for 4 like the nesher. Fine. But in any event, but that's where the benchmark is sent. Now, what about the other birds of the Torah? And what do we have now? We have the Peres and Aznia. They have one kosher siman, each one of them. We have the Orev. They have two kosher simanim. And we have now another 20 other birds in the Torah, which just by process of elimination, they're going to have three kosher simanim. I worked backwards to arrive at that conclusion. And I don't even have to be that smart, meaning the Gemara is going to point that out. So we have Nesher having zero, Peres v'Aznia having one, Orev having two kosher simanim, and all 20 other birds having three kosher simanim. Why then does the Torah enumerate the other 23 birds once Nesher sets the benchmark? And the answer is, as the Gemara just pointed out, because these are the exceptions to the rule. Normally, all you need to exhibit is just about one kosher siman, and you're good to go. And these are the exceptions to the rule. Okay, so far so good. Let's continue. Michti. We're in the middle of Samech Alef Amud Beis. Michti. Esrim v'arba ofos tameim havu. So the Gemara says there are a total now of 24 birds, as we've gone over now numerous times. Yefshu dechadika bahanach leka bahani. So of the list of the 24 birds, obviously there's going to be overlap. And so, isn't this an example of no longer the rule, but rather the exception? So the Gemara says, okay, but here's the tradition that we work with. There are, in fact, 24 non-kosher birds. And there are 4 simanim to work with. Tlasam hadre bechulu, esrim mehem shlosha shlosha. 20 of them have 3 kosher simanim. Vitrei ba'orev, the orev has 2 kosher simanim. Chad beperes v'chad be'aznia, 1 by the peres, 1 by the aznia. Disa b'ha, lesa b'ha, and what is true by one is not true by the other. Okay, so basically a summary of everything that we saw to so far today. Mao detema leiluf mine. And so therefore, the Hava Mina would have been any one of these now could serve as our precedent, meaning maybe the 20 birds that have three simanim, maybe the Arav that has two simanim, maybe the Perish Vazniya that has one simon, to which the Gemara says, Kasar Rechmana Nesher. That's where Nesher now kicks in. Because Nesher is the only bird that has none of the simanim, none of the simanik ashras. So the Gemara says, Nesher delesle klal hu de lotechal, ha'ika de isle chad echol. So the Gemara says, so that sets the benchmark. And these are birds that are mentioned in the Torah are now serving as the exception to the general rule. Generally speaking, you need one of the simanik ashras and you're good to go. And with all that stated, it brings us now to the end of today's daf, and with one final question. And the question we could have asked at the beginning of the daf, but the Gemara saved it to the end. If that's true, so then what are we doing with the Torah? Right? If you remember the beginning brisa that opened up our daf today on the top of the top of Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. So the Gemara's question over there was, statement was, the Nesher is the most non-kosher bird, and the Torah is the most kosher bird. The Nesher exhibits zero of the Simanim, and the Torah exhibits four of the four Simanik Kashras. If it has zero, it's not kosher like the Nesher. If it's got four, so then it's kosher like the Torah. And now we've just learned over the course of today's daf, to succinctly summarize the entire daf today, truth of the matter is you don't need to have four in order to be kosher. You only need to be one. You just have to deviate from the Nesher in order to be a kosher bird. Nesher is zero for four, so all you need is one in order to be a kosher bird.
And you have to be not one of the
23 listed. Right? Well said. So why then are we even looking at the Torah? The Torah no longer serves as a model of what is kosher. In fact, it's misleading. Because the Torah exhibits all four. We don't need all four. You just need one, and that would be enough. And so the Gemara now asks the question. So if that's true, Elatorim, Dekazur Rechman Alamali, so Amar Avukva Barchama, Lekarban. So the Gemara's response is that the Torah is there in the Torah, not to share with us exactly what is kosher and not kosher regarding a bird, because that we've already established, in terms of which birds can be offered as a Karban. And that's it. Meaning the only birds that can be offered as a korban is the tor and anything like the tor.
Why is chicken, for example, missing of the four?
This is where the gemara gets abstract. Meaning I don't know. So the and Rashi on the bottom, the korban shehein levanim kshirim the korban v'lo af acher v'hai diktanu lutan el v'kamer af kol lo itzrich lemelef minayim midi simani tahara da'abes simanecha nafkalam minesher v'kosher came medalit. Right, like we've been saying over the course of today's daf, you only need one of them to be kosher, not all four. Ella simana ba'ama orilan she'elo hein simani tahara. In other words, the only reason why the Torah is just mentioned in the brisa is just to show us what the four simanim are. But you don't need all four simanim. But we use the Torah just to simply show, oh, you know what the Torah has? It's got all four. So now we know what all four are, and then from there we're going to extrapolate and just simply say, but I only need one of the four. Now, okay, fine. Rashi has another gear set at the end of the Gemara over here, but for our purposes, let's suffice to say. Okay, in terms of summary of today's daf, it's actually very simple to summarize today's daf. 24 birds listed in the Torah. Of the 24 birds that are listed in the Torah, so they are non-kosher. The rest of the birds of the world are, in fact, kosher. And in terms of the simanim, so our Mishnah gave us simanim, the characteristics of a bird. One, which is behavioral. Three, which are physiological. And what we learned in the course of today's daf is that in order for a bird to be not kosher, it's got to go 0 for 4. It's got to exhibit none of the simani kashrus mentioned in the Mishnah. How do we know that? Because the Nesher is a prototype. Once the Nesher serves as a prototype, it's 0 for 4. Anything short of that, anything more than that, is in fact going to be a kosher bird. The other birds of the Torah. So each one of the other birds in the Torah do exhibit simani kashrus. Two of them exhibit one, Parasaz Niyah. One of them exhibit two, the Arev. And the other 20 exhibit three. Okay, I don't know at this point in time, even with tomorrow's daf, as we're going to discuss this more in tomorrow's daf, even with tomorrow's daf, we're not sure which of the kosher simanim are exhibited by which of the birds. And as I mentioned back in the intro, we're not even sure what the birds actually are in terms of definition. It makes for makes for the Gemara to be less concrete and slightly more abstract. But anyway, these birds in the Torah are exceptional, meaning despite the fact that they do have some simani kashrus, which normally would render a bird kosher, but these birds are not kosher. But in terms of all the other birds in the world, as long as they have one of the simani kashrus, that would be good and that would be kosher. The Bryce's listing of the tour, that's just to show us what the four simanim are. The tour is in fact good for a carbon, but the truth of the matter is you only need one of the four simanim.